Yes. At first glance, Adian and Aelin looked like siblings. But it was Adian's smile that gave away his heritage. Gavriel would know in a heartbeat if Adian's scent didn't give it away first. Fenris stepped closer to the male, a hand on his shoulder as they entered the hallway. For both Rowan and Fenris, Gavriel had always been their sounding board. Never each other. No, he and Fenris. It was easier to be at each other's throats instead. Rowan said to both of his former companions, "If you so much as hint about Gavriel's son to Maeve, our bargain is over. You'll never find Lorcan. And if Lorcan does show up, I'll gladly help him kill you." Rowan prayed it wouldn't come to it, to a fight that brutal and devastating. This was war, though, and he had no intention of losing it. Chapter 24. The Windsinger left Ilium at dawn, its crew and captain unaware that the two hooded individuals and their pet falcon, who had paid in gold, had no intention of going the entire journey to Lareba. Whether they pieced together that those two individuals were also the general and queen who had liberated their town the night before, they didn't let on. It was considered an easy trip down the coast of the continent, though Aelin wondered if voicing that statement would guarantee it wasn't an easy trip. First, there was the matter of sailing through Otterland's waters, near Rifthold specifically. If the witches patrolled far out to sea... But they had no other choice, not with the net Erewhon had stretched across the continent, not with his threat to find and capture Rowan and Dorian still ringing fresh in her mind, along with the throbbing of the deep purple bruise on her chest, right over her heart. Standing on the deck of the ship, the rising sun staining the turquoise bay of Ilium with gold and pink, Aelin wondered if the next time she'd see these waters, they'd be red. Wondered how long the Otterlanian soldiers would remain on their side of the border. Adian stepped to her side, finished with his third inspection. "Everything looks fine."
Lysandra said all was clear.
Indeed, from high up on the mainmast of the ship, Lysandra's falcon eyes missed nothing. Adian frowned. "You know, you ladies can let us males do things every now and then." Aelin lifted a brow.
Where would the fun be in that?
But she knew this would be an ongoing argument, stepping back so that others, so that Adian, might fight for her. It had been bad enough in Rifthold, bad enough knowing that those rings and collars might enslave them. But what Erewhon had done to that overseer, as an experiment. Aelin glanced toward the scurrying crew, biting back her demand to hurry. Every minute delayed could be one that Erewhon closed in on Rowan and Dorian. It was only a matter of time before a report reached him regarding where they'd been spotted. Aelin tapped her foot on the deck. The rocking of the ship on the calm waves echoed the beat of her foot. She'd always loved the smell and feel of the sea. But now... even the lapping of those waves seemed to say, "Hurry, hurry." "The King of Otterland, and Parrington, I suppose, had me in their grasp for years," Adian said. His voice was tight enough that Aelin turned from the sea to face him. He gripped the wooden railing, the scars on his hands stark against his summer-tanned skin. "They met with me in Terrasen. In Otterland. He had me in his rotting dungeon, gods above. And yet he didn't do that to me. He offered me the ring, but didn't notice I wore a fake instead. Why not cleave me open and corrupt me? He had to know. He had to know that you'd come for me."
"The king left Dorian alone for as long as he could. Perhaps that goodness extended to you too. Perhaps he knew that if you were gone, I might very well have decided to let this world go to hell and never free him for spite.
Would you have done that? The people you love are just weapons that will be used against you,
Rowan had once told her. Don't waste your energy worrying about what could have been.
She knew she hadn't answered his question. Adian didn't look at her, as he said. I knew what happened in Endovir, Aelin. But seeing that overseer, hearing what he said...
His throat bobbed.
I was so close to the salt mines. That year, I was camped with the Bane right over the border for 3 months.
She whipped her head to him. We're not starting down this road. Erewhon sent that man for a reason, for this reason. He knows my past, wants me to know he's aware of it, and will use it against me. Against us. He'll use everyone we know if he needs to.
Adian sighed. Would you have told me what happened last night, if I hadn't been there?
I don't know. I bet you would have awoken as soon as I unleashed my power on him.
He snorted. It's hard to miss.
The crying of gulls swooping overhead filled the quiet that followed. Despite her declaration not to linger in the past, Aelin said carefully, Darrow claimed you fought at Theralis. She'd been meaning to ask for weeks, but hadn't worked up the nerve. Adian fixed his stare on the churning water.
It was a long time ago.
She swallowed against the burning in her throat. You were barely 14.
I was.
His jaw tightened. She could only imagine the carnage and the horror, not just of a boy killing and fighting, but seeing the people they cared for fall. One by one. I'm sorry, she breathed, that you had to endure it. Adian turned toward her, no hint of the haughty arrogance and insolence.
Theralis is the battlefield I see the most, in my dreams.
He scratched at a fleck on the rail.
Darrow made sure I stayed out of the thick of it, but... We were overwhelmed. It was unavoidable.
He'd never told her that Darrow had tried to shield him.
She put a hand atop Adian's and squeezed.
I'm sorry, she said again.
She couldn't bring herself to ask more. He shrugged with a shoulder. My life as a warrior was chosen long before that battlefield.
Indeed. She couldn't imagine him without that sword and shield, both currently strapped across his back. She couldn't decide if it was a good thing. Silence settled between them, heavy and old and weary. I don't blame him, Aelin said at last. I don't blame Darrow for blocking me from Terrasen. I would do the same, judge the same, if I were him.
Adian frowned. I thought you were going to fight his decree.
I am, she swore, but I understand why Darrow did it. Adian observed her before nodding. A grave nod, from one soldier to another. She put a hand against the amulet beneath her clothes. Its ancient, otherworldly power rubbed up against her, and a shiver went down her spine. Find the lock. Good thing Skull's Bay was on their way to the stone marshes of Eelway, and good thing that its ruler possessed a magical map inked on his hands. A map that revealed enemies, storms, and hidden treasure.
A map to find things that did not wish to be found.
Aelin lowered her hand, propping both on the rail and examining the scar across each palm.
So many promises and oaths made. So many debts and favors to still call in.
Aelin wondered what answers and oaths she might find waiting in Skull's Bay.
If they got there before Erewhon did.
Chapter 25 Manon Blackbeak awoke to the sighing of leaves, the distant call of wary birds, and the reek and loam of ancient wood. She groaned as she opened her eyes, squinting at the dappled sunlight through heavy canopy cover. She knew these trees. Oakwald. She was still strapped in the saddle, Abraxo sprawled beneath her, neck craned so he could monitor her breaths. His dark eyes widened with panic as she moaned, trying to sit up. She'd fallen flat onto her back, had undoubtedly lain here for some time, judging by the blue blood coating Abraxos's sides. Manon lifted her head to peer at her stomach, and bit back a cry as muscles pulled. Wet warmth trickled from her abdomen. The wounds had barely set then, if they were tearing so easily. Her head pounded like a thousand forges, and her mouth was so dry she could barely shift her tongue. First order of business? Get out of this saddle, then try to assess herself, then water. A stream babbled nearby, close enough that she wondered if Abraxos had chosen this spot for it. He huffed, shifting in worry, and she hissed as her stomach tore more.
Stop, she rasped. I'm fine.
She wasn't fine. Not even close. But she wasn't dead, and that was a start. The other bullshit, her grandmother, the 13, the Kraken claim. She'd deal with it once she didn't have one foot in the darkness. Manon lay there for long minutes, breathing against the pain. Clean the wound, staunch the bleeding. She had nothing on her but her leathers. But her shirt. She didn't have the strength to boil the linen first. She'd just have to pray that the immortality gracing her blood would drive off any infection. The Kraken blood in her.
Manon sat up in a sudden jerk, not giving herself time to balk, biting down on her scream so hard her lip bled, a coppery tang filling her mouth. But she was up.
Blood dribbled from beneath her flying leathers, but she focused on unstrapping the harness, one buckle at a time. She was not dead. The mother still had some use for her. Free of the harness, Manon stared at the drop off Abraxos, onto the mossy ground. Darkness save her. This was going to hurt. Just shifting her body to pivot her leg over one side made her clench her teeth against the sobbing. If her grandmother's nails had been poisoned, she'd be dead. But they had been left jagged, jagged instead of honed, and full of rust. A large head nudged at her knee, and she found Abraxos there, neck stretched, his head just below her feet, the offer in his eyes. Not trusting consciousness to keep its grip much longer, Manon slid onto his wide, broad head, breathing through the ripples of fiery pain. His breath warmed her chilled skin as he gently lowered her onto the grassy clearing. She lay on her back, letting Abraxos nose her, a faint whine breaking from him.
Fine, she breathed.
Manon awoke at twilight. Abraxos was curled around her, his wing angled to form a makeshift covering. At least she was warm, but her thirst.
Manon groaned, and the wing instantly snapped back, revealing a leathery head and concerned eyes.
You... Mother Hen,
she gasped out, sliding her arms beneath her and pushing up. Oh gods, oh gods, oh gods. But she was in a sitting position. Water. That stream. Abraxos was too big to reach it through the trees, but she needed water. Soon. How many days had it been? How much blood had she lost?
Help,
she breathed. Powerful jaws closed around the collar of her tunic. Hoisting her up with such gentleness, Manon's chest tightened. She swayed, bracing a hand on his leathery side, but stayed upright. Water. Then she could sleep more.
Wait here,
she said, stumbling to the nearest tree, a hand on her belly, Windcleaver a weight on her back. She debated leaving the sword behind, but any extra movement, even unbuckling the belt from across her chest, was unthinkable. Tree to tree she staggered, nails digging into each trunk to keep herself upright, her ragged breathing filling the silent forest. She was alive. She was alive. The stream was barely more than a trickle through some mossy boulders, but it was clear and fast, and the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. Manon surveyed the water. If she knelt, could she get back up? She'd sleep here if she had to, once she drank. Carefully, muscles trembling, she knelt at the bank. She swallowed her cry as she bowed over the stream, as more blood slid out. She drank the first few handfuls without stop, then slowed, her stomach aching inside and out now. A twig snapped, and Manon was on her feet, instinct overriding pain so fast the agony hit her a breath later. But she scanned the trees, the rocks and canopy, and little hills. A cool female voice said from across the stream,
It seems you have fallen far from your eyrie, Blackbeak.
Manon couldn't place who it belonged to, what witch she'd met. From behind the shadows of a tree, a stunning young woman emerged. Her body was supple yet lithe, her unbound auburn hair draping to partially cover her nakedness. Not a stitch of clothing covered that cream-colored skin. Not a scar or mark marred flesh as pure as snow. The woman's silken hair moved with her as she stepped closer. But the woman was no witch. And her blue eyes... Run. Run! Eyes of glacier blue gleamed even in the shadowed wood, and a full red mouth made for the bedroom parted in a too-white smile... as she took in Manon. The blood. The injury. Abraxos roared in warning, shaking the ground, the trees, the leaves.
Who are you?
Manon said, her voice raw. The young woman cocked her head, a robin studying a writhing worm.
The Dark King calls me his bloodhound.
Manon made every breath count as she rallied her strength.
Never heard of you,
Manon rasped. Something too dark to be blood slithered under the cream-colored skin of the woman's abdomen, then vanished. She traced a small, beautiful hand over where it had squirmed across the curve of her taut belly.
You would not have heard of me until your treachery... I was kept beneath those other mountains, but when he honed the power within my own blood.
Those blue eyes pierced Manon, and it was madness that glittered there.
He could do much with you, Blackbeak, so much. He sent me, to bring his crowned rider to his side once more.
Manon backed away a step. Just one.
There is nowhere to flee. Not with your belly barely inside you.
She tossed her auburn hair over a shoulder.
Oh, what fun we'll have now that I've found you, Blackbeak. All of us.
Manon braced herself, drawing Windcleaver as the woman's form glowed like a black sun, then rippled, the edges expanding, morphing, until... The woman had been an illusion, a glamour. The creature that stood before her had been birthed in darkness, so white she doubted it had ever felt the kiss of the sun until now. And the mind that had invented it. The imagination of someone born in another world, one where nightmares prowled the dark, cold earth. The body and face were vaguely human, but... Bloodhound. Yes, that was fitting. The nostrils were enormous, the eyes so large and lidless she wondered if Erewhon himself had spread her eyelids apart, and her mouth. The teeth were black stumps, the tongue thick and red, for tasting the air. And spreading from that white body, the method of Manon's transportation. Wings.
You see,
the bloodhound purred.
You see what he can give you. I can now taste the wind, smell its very marrow. Just as I smelled you across the land.
Manon kept an arm cradled over her belly, as the other trembled, lifting Windcleaver. The bloodhound laughed, low and soft.
I shall enjoy this, I think,
she said, and pounced. Alive. She was alive, and she would stay that way. Manon jumped back, sliding between two trees, so close that the creature hit them, a wall of wood in her way. Those calf eyes narrowed in rage, and her white hands, tipped with earth-digging claws, sank into the wood as she backtracked, only to be stuck. Maybe the mother was watching over her. The bloodhound had lodged herself between the two trees, half in, half out, thanks to those wings, wood squeezing. Manon ran. Pain ripped at her with each step, and she sobbed through her teeth as she sprinted between the trees. A snap and crash of wood and leaves from behind. Manon pushed herself, a hand shoved against her wound, gripping Windcleaver tight enough it shook. But there was Abraxos, eyes wild, wings already flapping, preparing for flight. Oh, she rasped, flinging herself at him as wood crunched behind her. Abraxos launched for her as she leaped for him, not onto him, but into his claws, into the mighty talons that wrapped her under her breasts, her stomach tearing a bit more as he hefted her up, 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 through wood and leaf and nest. The air snapped beneath her boots, and Manon, eyes streaming, peered down to see the bloodhound's claws reaching wildly, but too late. A shriek of rage on her lips, the bloodhound backed a few steps to the edge of the clearing, preparing to get a running leap into the air, as Abraxos's wings beat like hell. They cleared the canopy, his wings shattering branches, raining them onto the bloodhound. The wind tore at Manon as Abraxos sailed with her, higher and higher, heading east, toward the plains, east and south. The thing wouldn't be detained long. Abraxos realized it too. Had planned for it. A flicker of white broke through the canopy below them. Abraxos lunged, a swift, lethal dive, his roar of rage making Manon's head buzz. The bloodhound didn't have time to bank as Abraxos's mighty tail slammed into her, poison-coated steel barbs hitting home. Black, festering blood sprayed, ivory membranous wings sundered. Then they were sweeping back up, and the bloodhound was tumbling down through the canopy,
Dying or injured, Manon didn't care.
I will find you,
the bloodhound screeched from the forest floor. It was miles before the screamed words faded. Manon and Abraxos paused only long enough for her to crawl onto his back and strap herself in. No signs of other wyverns in the skies. No hint of the bloodhound pursuing them. Perhaps that poison would keep her down for a while, if not permanently.
To the coast,
Manon said over the wind, as the sky bled crimson into a final blackness.
Somewhere safe.
Blood trickled from between her fingers, faster, stronger than before. Only a moment before the darkness claimed her again. Chapter 26. Even after 2 weeks in Skull's Bay, being utterly ignored by Rolf despite their requests to meet with him, Dorian still wasn't entirely used to the heat and humidity. It hounded him day and night, driving him from sleep to wake drenched in sweat, chasing him inside the ocean rose when the sun was at its zenith. And since Rolf refused to see them, Dorian tried to fill his days with things other than complaining about the heat. Mornings were for practicing his magic in a jungle clearing a few miles away. Worse, Rowan made him run there and back, and when they returned at lunch, he had the choice of eating before or after one of Rowan's grueling workouts. Honestly, Dorian had no idea how Aelin had survived months of this, let alone fallen in love with the warrior while she did. Though he supposed both the queen and prince possessed a sadistic streak that made them compatible. Some days, Fenris and Gavriel met them in the inn's courtyard to either exercise or give unwanted pointers on Dorian's technique with a sword and dagger. Some days Rowan let them stay. Others he kicked them out with a snarl. The latter, Dorian realized, usually happened when even the heat and sun couldn't drive away the shadows of the past few months. When he awoke with his sweat feeling like Sorsha's blood. When he couldn't abide even the brush of his tunic against his neck. He wasn't sure whether to thank the Fey Prince for noticing, or to hate him for the kindness. During the afternoons, he and Rowan prowled the city for gossip and news, watching Rolf's men as closely as they were watched. Only 7 captains of Rolf's depleted armada were on the island, 8 including Rolf, with fewer ships anchored in the bay. Some had fled after the Volg attack. Some now slept with the fishes at the bottom of the harbor, their ships with them. Reports poured in from Rifthold, of the city under witch command, of most of it in ruin, its nobility and merchants fleeing to country estates and leaving the poor to fend for themselves. The witches controlled the city gates and the docks. Nothing and no one got in without them knowing. Worse, ships from the Farian Gap were sailing down the Avery toward Rifthold, carrying strange soldiers and beasts that turned the city into their own personal hunting ground. Erewhon was no fool with planning this war. Those ships prowling the Avery were too small, Rowan had claimed, and there was no way the force at the dead end was the entirety of Erewhon's armada. So where had Otterlin's fleet been all this time? Rowan discovered the answer 5 days into their stay. The Gulf of Oro. Some of the fleet had been positioned near Ilway's northwestern coast, some hidden in Melisande's ports, where, rumor had it, their queen was allowing Morath soldiers in through any direction they pleased. Erewhon had skillfully divided his fleet, placing it in enough key locations that Rowan informed Dorian they'd have to sacrifice land, allies, and geographical advantages in order to hold others. Dorian had hated to admit to the Fey warrior that he'd never heard of any of these plans these past years,
His council meetings had all been on policy and trade and slaves. A distraction, he realized. A way to keep the lords and rulers of the continent focused on one thing, while other plans were set in motion. And now, if Erewhon summoned the fleet from the Gulf, they'd likely sail around Ilwe's southern coast and sack every city until they reached Orinth's doorstep. Perhaps they'd get lucky, and Erewhon's fleet would collide with Maeve's. Not that they'd heard anything of the latter. Not even a whisper of where and how fast her ship sailed, or a whisper of where Aelin Galathinius had gone. It was for news of her, Dorian knew, that Rowan hunted through the city streets. So Dorian and Rowan collected kernels of information and would return to the inn each night to analyze them over spiced prawns from the warm waters of the archipelago and steaming rice from traders in the southern continent, their glasses of orange-infused water resting atop the maps and charts they'd purchased in town. Information was mostly second or third hand, and a common whore patrolling the streets seemed to know as much as the sailors laboring at the docks. But none of the whores or the sailors or the traders had news of Prince Holland's or Queen Georgina's fates. War was coming, and the fate of a child and a flippant queen who had never bothered to take power for herself was of little concern to anyone but Dorian, it seemed. On a particularly steamy afternoon, cooling off now thanks to a dazzling thunderstorm, Dorian set down his fork beside his plate of steamed reef fish and said to Rowan, "I find I'm tired of waiting for Rolf to meet with us." Rowan's fork clinked against his plate as he lowered it and waited with preternatural stillness. Where Gavriel and Fenris were for the afternoon, he didn't care. Dorian was actually grateful for their absence, as he said, "I need some paper and a messenger." Rolf summoned them and the cadre to the Sea Dragon Tavern 3 hours later. Rowan had been teaching him about shielding these past few days, and Dorian erected one around himself, as Rolf led the four of them along the upstairs hall of the tavern, heading for his office. His idea had unfolded smoothly, perfectly. No one had noticed that the letter Rowan mailed after lunch was the same one that was later delivered to Dorian at the inn. But Rolf's spies noticed the shock that Dorian displayed while reading it, the dismay and fear and rage at whatever news he'd received. Rowan, true to form, had paced and snarled at the news he'd attained. They made sure the servant washing the hallway had overheard their mention of war-altering information, that Rolf himself could gain much from it, or lose everything. And now, striding for the man's office, Dorian couldn't tell if it pleased or unnerved him that they were so closely watched that his plan had worked. Gavriel and Fenris, thankfully, asked no questions. The pirate lord, clad in a faded blue and gold jacket, paused before the oak door to his office. His gloves were on, his face a bit haggard. He doubted that expression would improve when Rolf realized there was no news whatsoever, and he'd have this meeting whether he wanted to or not. Dorian caught the three fey males assessing Rolf's each breath, his posture, listening to the sounds of the first mate and quartermaster a level below. All three of them exchanged barely perceptible nods. Allies. At least until Rolf heard them out. Rolf unlocked the door, muttering, "This had better be worth my time," and stalked into the awaiting dimness beyond. Then stopped dead. Even in the watery light, Dorian could perfectly see the woman sitting at Rolf's desk, her black clothes dirty, weapons gleaming, and her feet propped on the dark wooden surface. Aelin Galathinius, her hands laced behind her head, grinned at them all, and said, "I like this office far better than your other one, Rolf." Chapter 27. Dorian didn't dare move as Rolf let out a snarl. "I have a distinct memory, Selena Sardathian, of saying that if you set foot in my territory again, your life was forfeit." "Ah," Aelin said, lowering her hands but leaving her feet still propped on Rolf's desk. "But where would the fun be in that?" Rowan was still as death beside him. Aelin's grin became feline as she finally lowered her feet and ran her hands along either side of the desk, assessing the smooth wood as if it was a prize horse. She inclined her head to Dorian. "Hello, Majesty."
"Hello, Selena," he said as calmly as he could,
well aware that two females behind him could hear his thundering heart. Rolf whipped his head toward him. Because it was Selena who sat here. For whatever purpose, it was Selena Sardathian in this room. She jerked her chin at Rolf. "You've seen better days, but considering half your fleet has abandoned you, I'd say you look decent enough."
"Get out of my chair,"
Rolf said too quietly. Aelin did no such thing. She just gave Rowan a sultry sweep from foot to face. Rowan's expression remained unreadable, eyes intent, near glowing. And then Aelin said to Rowan with a secret smile,
"You, I don't know, but I'd like to."
Rowan's lips tugged upward.
"I'm not on the market, unfortunately."
"Pity,"
Aelin said, cocking her head as she noticed a bowl of small emeralds on Rolf's desk.
"Don't do it, don't."
Aelin swiped up the emeralds in a hand, picking them over as she glanced at Rowan beneath her lashes.
"She must be a rare, staggering beauty to make you so faithful."
"God save them all."
He could have sworn Fenris coughed behind him. Aelin chucked the emeralds into the metal dish as if they were bits of copper, their plunking the only sound.
"She must be clever, plunk, and fascinating, plunk, and very, very talented."
Plunk, plunk, plunk,
went the emeralds. She examined the four gems remaining in her hand.
"She must be the most wonderful person who ever existed."
Another cough from behind him, from Gavriel this time. But Aelin only had eyes for Rowan, as the warrior said to her.
"She is indeed that. And more."
"Hmm,"
Aelin said, rolling the emeralds in her scarred palm with expert ease. Rolf growled,
"What are you doing here?"
Aelin dumped the emeralds into their dish.
"Is that any way to speak to an old friend?"
Rolf stalked toward the desk, and Rowan trembled with restraint as the pirate lord braced his hands on the wooden surface.
"Last I heard, your master was dead and you sold the guild to his underlings. You're a free woman. What are you doing in my city?"
Aelin met his sea-green eyes with an irreverence that Dorian wondered if she had been born with or had honed through skill and blood and adventure.
"War is coming, Rolf. Am I not allowed to weigh my options? I thought to see what you planned to do."
Rolf looked over his broad shoulder at Dorian. "Rumor has it she was your champion this fall. Do you wish to deal with this?" Dorian said smoothly,
"You will find, Rolf, that one does not deal with Selena Sardathian. One survives her."
A flash of a grin from Aelin. Rolf rolled his eyes and said to the assassin queen,
"So what is the plan, then? You made a bargain to get out of Endovir, became the king's champion,
And now that he is dead, you wish to see how you might profit.
Dorian tried not to flinch. Dead. His father was dead. At his own hands.
You know how my tastes run, Aelin said. Even with Erebon's fortune and the sale of the guild, war can be a profitable time for people who are smart with their business.
And where is the 16-year-old self-righteous brat who wrecked 6 of my ships, stole 2 of them, and destroyed my town, all for the sake of 200 slaves?
A shadow flickered in Aelin's eyes that sent a chill down Dorian's spine. Spend a year in Endovir, Rolf, and you quickly learn how to play a different sort of game.
I told you, Rolf seethed with quiet venom, that you'd one day pay for that arrogance.
Aelin's smile became lethal. Indeed I did, and so did Erebon Hommel.
Rolf blinked, just once, then straightened. Get out of my seat, and put back that emerald you slipped up your sleeve.
Aelin snorted, and with a flash of her fingers, an emerald, the 4th one Dorian had forgotten, appeared between her fingers. Good. At least your eyesight isn't failing in your old age.
And the other one,
Rolf said through clenched teeth. Aelin grinned again, and then leaned back in Rolf's chair, tipped up her head, and spat out an emerald she'd somehow kept hidden under her tongue. Dorian watched the gem arc neatly through the air. Its plunk in the dish was the only sound. Dorian glanced at Rowan, but delight shone in the prince's eyes. Delight and pride and simmering lust. Dorian quickly looked away. Aelin said to the pirate lord, I have 2 questions for you. Rolf's hand twitched toward his rapier. You're in no rutting position to ask questions. Aren't I? After all, I made you a promise 2.5 years ago, one that you signed. Rolf snarled. Aelin propped her chin on a fist. Have you or have any of your ships bought, traded, or transported slaves since that unfortunate day?
No.
A satisfied little nod. And have you provided sanctuary for them here?
We haven't gone out of our way, but if any arrived, yes.
Each word was tighter than the last, a spring about to burst forward and throttle the queen. Dorian prayed the man wouldn't be dumb enough to draw on her, not with Rowan watching his every breath. Good and good, Aelin said. Smart of you, not to lie to me. As I took it upon myself when I arrived this morning to look into your warehouses, to ask around in the markets, and then I came here. She ran her hands over the papers and books on the desk. To see your ledgers for myself. She dragged a finger down a page containing various columns and numbers. Textiles, spices, porcelain diningware, rice from the southern continent, and various contraband. But no slaves. I have to say I'm impressed, both at you honoring your word and at your thorough record-keeping. A low snarl.
Do you know what your stunt cost me?
Aelin flicked her eyes toward a piece of parchment on the wall. Various daggers, swords, and even scissors embedded in it. Target practice, apparently, for Rolf. Well, there's the bar tab I left unpaid, she said of the document, which was indeed a list of items, and, holy gods, that was a large sum of money. Rolf turned to Rowan, Fenris, and Gavriel.
You want my assistance in this war? Here's the cost. Kill her. Now. Then my ships and men are yours.
Fenris's dark eyes glittered, but not at Rolf, as Aelin rose to her feet. Her black clothes were travel-worn, her golden hair gleaming in the gray light. And even in a room of professional killers, she took the lion's share of air.
"Oh, I don't think they will," she said.
"Or even can." Rolf whirled to her. "You'll find that you are not so skilled in the face of Fey warriors." She pointed to one of the chairs before the desk.
"You might want to sit."
"Get the hell out of—"
Aelin let out a low whistle. "Allow me to introduce to you, Captain Rolf, the incomparable, the beautiful, and the absolutely and all-around flawless Queen of Terrasen."
Dorian's brows creased, but footsteps sounded, and then the males shifted, as Aelin Galathinius indeed strode into the room, clad in a dark green tunic of equal wear and dirt, her golden hair unbound, her turquoise and gold eyes laughing, as she strode past a slack-jawed Rolf and perched on the arm of Aelin's chair. Dorian couldn't tell. Without a fey sense of smell, he couldn't tell.
What devilry is this?" Rolf hissed, yielding a single step.
Aelin and Aelin looked at each other. The one in black grinned up at the newcomer.
"Oh, you are gorgeous, aren't you?"
The one in green smiled, but for all its delight, all its wicked mischief, it was a softer smile, made with a mouth that was perhaps less used to snarling and teeth-baring and getting away with saying hideous, swaggering things. Lysandra, then. The two queens faced Rolf.
"Aelin Galathinius had no twin," he growled, a hand on his sword.
Aelin, in black, the true Aelin, who had been among them all along, rolled her eyes.
"Ugh, Rolf, you ruin my fun. Of course I don't have a twin."
She jerked her chin at Lysandra, and the shifter's flesh glowed and melted, hair becoming a heavy, straight fall of dark tresses, her skin sun-kissed, her up-tilted eyes a striking green. Rolf barked in alarm and staggered back, only for Fenris to steady himself with a hand on his shoulder, as the Fey warrior stepped forward, eyes wide.
"A shifter,"
Fenris breathed. Aelin and Lysandra fixed the warrior with an unimpressed look that would have sent lesser men running. Even Gavriel's placid face was slack at the sight of the shapeshifter, his tattoos bobbing as he swallowed.
Adian's father. And if Adian was here with Aelin?
"As intrigued as I am to see that the cadre is present," Aelin said, "will you verify to his pirateness that I am who I say I am, and we can move on to more pressing matters?"
Rolf's face was white with fury, as he realized they'd all known who truly sat before them. Dorian said,
"She is Aelin Galathinius, and Selena Sardothian."
But it was to Fenris and Gavriel, the outside party, that Rolf turned. Gavriel nodded, Fenris's eyes now fixed on the queen.
"She is who she says she is."
Rolf turned to Aelin, but the queen frowned up at Lysandra as the shifter handed her a wax-sealed tube.
"You made your hair shorter." "You try hair that long and see if you last more than a day," Lysandra said, fingering the hair brushing her collarbone.
Rolf gaped at them. Aelin grinned at her companion and faced the pirate lord.
"So, Rolf," the queen drawled, tossing the tube from hand to hand, "let's discuss this little business of you refusing to aid my cause."
Chapter 28. Aelin Galathinius didn't bother to contain her smugness, as Rolf pointed to the large table on the right side of his office, far grander than the piece of shit office where he'd once had her and Sam meet him. She managed all of one step toward her designated seat, before Rowan was at her side, a hand on her elbow. His face, how gods she'd missed that harsh, unyielding face, was tight, as he leaned in to whisper with Fay softness.
The Cadre is working with us on the condition that it'll lead them to Lorkhan, since Maeve sent them to kill him. I refused to divulge his whereabouts. Most of Otterland's fleet is in the Gulf of Oro, thanks to some foul agreement with Melisandre to use their ports, and Maeve's own armada sails for Eelwe. Whether to attack or aid, we don't know.
Well, it was nice to know absolute hell awaited them, and that the information about Maeve's armada was correct. But then Rowan added,
"And I missed you like hell."
She smiled despite what he'd told her, pulling back to look at him. Untouched. Unharmed. It was more than she could have hoped for, even with the news he'd delivered. Aelin decided she didn't particularly give a shit who was watching, and rose up on her toes to brush her mouth against his. It had taken all her wits and abilities to avoid leaving traces of her scent today for him to detect, and the shocked delight on his face had been utterly worth it. Rowan's hand on her arm tightened as she pulled away.
"The feeling, Prince," she murmured, "is mutual."
The others were doing their best not to watch them, save for Rolf, who was still seething.
"Oh, don't look so put out, Captain," she said, turning away from Rowan and sliding into a seat across from Rolf.
"You hate me, I hate you. We both hate being told what to do by busybody overlording empires. It's a perfect pairing." Rolf spat.
"You nearly wrecked everything I've worked for.
Your silver tongue and arrogance won't get you through this." Just for the hell of it, she smiled and stuck out her tongue. Not the real thing, but a forked tongue of silver fire that wriggled like a snake's in the air. Fenris choked on a dark laugh. She ignored him. She'd deal with their presence later. She just prayed she'd be able to warn Adian before he ran into his father, who was now sitting two seats down from her, gawking at her as if she had 10 heads.
Gods. Even the expression was like Adian's.
How hadn't she noticed that this spring in Wendlin? Adian had been a boy the last time she'd seen him. But as a man. With Gabriel's immortality, they even looked the same age. Different in many ways. But that look, it was a reflection. Rolf wasn't smiling.
"A queen who plays with fire is not one who makes a solid ally."
"And a pirate whose men abandoned him at the first test of allegiance makes for a shit naval commander. Yet here I am, at this table."
"Careful, girl. You need me more than I need you."
"Do I?" A dance. That was all this was. Long before she'd set foot on this horrible island, it had been a dance, and she was now to enter into its second movement. She set Murtaugh's sealed letter of recommendation on the table between them. "The way I see it, I have the gold, and I have the ability to raise you up from a common criminal to a respectable, established businessman. Fenharrow can dispute who owns these islands. But what if I were to throw my support behind you? What if I were to make you not a pirate lord, but a pirate king?"
"And who would verify the word of a 19-year-old princess?"
She jerked her chin at the wax-sealed tube. "Murtaugh Alsbrook would. He wrote you a nice long letter about it." Rolf picked up the tube, studied it, and chucked it in a neat arc, right into his rubbish bin. The thud echoed through the office.
"And I would," Dorian said,
leaning forward before Aelin could snarl at the ignored letter.
"We win this war,
and you have the two largest kingdoms on this continent proclaiming you the undisputed king of all pirates. Skull's Bay and the Dead Islands become not a hideout for your people, but a proper home, a new kingdom. Rolf let out a low laugh. The talk of young idealists and dreamers. The world, Aelin said, will be saved and remade by the dreamers, Rolf. The world will be saved by the warriors, by the men and women who will spill their blood for it, not for empty promises and gilded dreams. Aelin laid her hands flat on the table. Perhaps. But if we win this war, it will be a new world. A free world. That is my promise. To you. To anyone who will march under my banner. A better world. And you will have to decide where your place in it shall be. That is the promise of a little girl, who still doesn't know how the world truly works, Rolf said. Masters are needed to maintain order, to keep things running and profitable. It will not end well for those who seek to upend it. Aelin purred. Do you want gold, Rolf? Do you want a title? Do you want glory or women or land? Or is it just the bloodlust that drives you? She gave a pointed glance at his gloved hands. What was the cost for the map? What was the end goal if that sacrifice had to be made? There is nothing you can offer or say, Aelin Galathinius, that I cannot attain myself. A sly smile. Unless you plan to offer me your hand and make me king of your territory, which might be an interesting proposition. Bastard. Self-serving, awful bastard. He'd seen her with Rowan. He was drinking in the stillness with which both of them now sat, the death in Rowan's eyes. Looks like you bit on the wrong horse, Rolf crooned. He flicked his eyes to Dorian. What news did you receive? But that wrong horse cut in smoothly. There was none. But you'll be glad to know your spies at the Ocean Rose are certainly doing their job, and that His Majesty is quite an accomplished actor. Aelin held in her laugh. Rolf's face darkened. Get out of my office. Dorian said coldly, For a petty grudge, you'd refuse to consider allying with us? Aelin snorted. I'd hardly call wrecking his shit poor city and ships a petty grudge. You have 2 days to get yourselves off this island, Rolf said, teeth flashing. After that, my promise from 2.5 years ago still holds. A sneer at her companions. Take your menagerie with you. Smoke curled in her mouth. She had expected debate, but it was time to regroup. Time to see what Rowan and Dorian had done, and plan out the next steps. Let Rolf think she was leaving the dance unfinished for now. Aelin hit the narrow hallway, a wall of muscle at her back and by her side, and faced another dilemma. Adian. He was loitering outside the inn to monitor for any unfriendly forces. If she stormed right to him, she'd bring him face to face with his long-lost, completely oblivious father. Aelin made it all of 3 steps down the hall when Gabriel said behind her,
Where is he?
Slowly, she looked back. The warrior's tan face was tight, his eyes full of sorrow and steel. She smirked. If you are referring to sweet darling Lorkin,
you know who I'm referring to.
Rowan took a step between them, but his harsh face yielded nothing. Fenris slipped into the hall, shutting Rolf's office door, and monitored them with dark amusement. Oh, Rowan had told her lots about him, A face and body men and women would kill to possess. What Maeve made him do. What he'd given for his twin. But Aelin sucked on a tooth and said to Gavriel, "Isn't the better question, who is he?" Gavriel didn't smile, didn't move.